This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, the president of Afghanistan wants to crack down on schools that teach extremism, and Secretary Rice challenges former President Clinton's statements in the media. Joining us today from our New York bureau is E.R. Shipp, professor of journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication. In Nashville, Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle, is at Spotland Productions, and John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute senior fellow in public policy, is at NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. Welcome to all of you, and let me just move on to Afghanistan. The president of the country is calling on Pakistan to close extremist schools or madrasas. He is in the U.S. with Pakistan's President Musharraf to talk with President Bush about his campaign against places that teach terror. But while at the White House yesterday, all three addressed the media, and President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan had this to say.
Terrorism was hurting us way before Iraq or September 11. The president mentioned some examples of it. These extremist forces were killing people in Afghanistan and around for years, closing schools, burning mosques, killing children, uprooting vineyards with vine trees, grapes hanging on them, forcing populations to poverty and misery. They came to America on September 11. But they were attacking you before September 11 in other parts of the world. We are a witness in Afghanistan as to what they are and how they can hurt. You are a witness in New York.
John, some people are calling this a war within a war. You've got Pakistan, which has some Taliban members, and Afghanistan, which has some Taliban members, blaming each other for the Taliban. What's going on here?
Well, I think that we have to remember that we are dealing with a certain kind of ideology, and Karzai is calling attention to it in Pakistan. Surely people in Pakistan could lob it back at the things that are going on there. But it's a kind of bone-deep hatred of, quote-unquote, the West, and especially the United States, which has been there for a long time, and it is reflexive. Now, whether or not we're talking about madrasa schools that teach these things explicitly, it's as deep-seated as the way we were taught to feel about Russia in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And as far as, say, the Taliban in Afghanistan, we have to remember that I will never forget an Afghani-American person I knew who, after 9/11, I was talking to about what happened. And she was a completely coherent person, but it was clear that underneath some of the things she was saying, that there was a certain small warm spot in her heart for Osama bin Laden, although she didn't think he was perfect. And also, she thought that the Taliban, while obviously thugs, and I guess you might say somewhat ham-handed in her view, she praised them for bringing a certain order to the country based on the chaos from before. So we're talking about something that is perhaps unknown to us now in terms of the depth of anti-Western sentiment and what it can be used to excuse.
Well, Mussolini made the trains run on time. I mean, there's a long history of authoritarian, fascistic governments actually being good at certain things. But that, of course, doesn't excuse what's going on. ER, I was struck by the fact that then you have the president of Pakistan saying, no, it's all your fault. But both of these countries' leaders have come to the U.S. to try to curry favor. How exactly is that going to affect U.S. policy, that you have the leaders backing up the United States, but the people are not so much on board sometimes?
You mean the people of these countries?
Yes, some of the people.
Well, in both cases, the president of Afghanistan and the president of Pakistan need as much aid as they can from the United States. So it's not a surprise that they would support President Bush and his stand against terrorism. Karzai is right that the madrasas are a breeding ground for the extremists in Islam who are fighting in the name of Islam. And Musharraf is also correct that Pakistan needs to do more to fight terrorism. There's that kind of no man's land between the two countries where much of the insurgency is taking place there, where the Taliban has a bit of a stronghold and where bin Laden may still be there, assuming he's still alive. So both men have troubles at their door, and they really need to work that out. Apparently, that's what the president has in mind for them doing over dinner tonight.
Yeah, who knows if it'll work out. But, you know, getting to the point that I made about how some people do not support the leaders, there have been multiple assassination attempts against Musharraf of Pakistan. And so some analysts of the region really say he's in a tight spot because if he goes too much towards the U.S., he could literally be killed. Jeff, what about that?
Well, yeah, indeed. I think leaders in this area, in particularly Pakistan and Afghanistan, they have a tough charge. They have to be able to build a strong alliance with the West, and at the same time, they have to be able to inspire and motivate their people, because people like order, they like passion. You talk about Mussolini, you talk about Stalin, you talk about Hitler, you talk about any leader that may be perceived as evil. The people supported them at one point because they spoke passionately about the things that that were important to them. And we talk about the madrasas and the education that's going on there. I want to point out as a side note that they aren't in principle a bad thing by and large as a religious school or seminary. The concern in this era of terrorism is that the radical sort of jihadist madrasas back up the perception that places like Afghanistan are breeding grounds for terrorists who are obsessed with the notion of destroying infidels. Now, it seemed to be okay in the 80s when it was the Soviet war and the Soviets were the infidels, but now that the U.S. is perceived as the enemy, it's a problem that Afghanistan and Pakistan want to remedy. They've seen $300 billion go to Iraq, and obviously President Karzai wants to be given some of that money to help things happen. So it's how you walk that fine line between the nationalist notion of protecting the country's pride and protecting Islam and trying to get some money for infrastructure to help from the West.
Yeah, and also,
go ahead.
Just going to say, in terms of that passion that people are attracted to, it can also be very dangerous if it's left unchanneled, like the Pashto are the disenfranchised tribe in Afghanistan. And for whatever terrible things they may have done, now that they don't have anything to do, that passion is channeled into destruction, just like the disenfranchised Sunnis in Iraq. That's always a problem.
Before we move on to another topic, ER, I want you to comment on something. Newsweek runs many different editions, as do most of the major U.S.-based news magazines. So in Europe and Latin America and throughout the world, there's a cover about losing Afghanistan. The question, you know, is the U.S. losing the war in Afghanistan? Here in the U.S., the cover is a features on My Life in Pictures. What's going on there with, you know, how are we supposed to stay abreast of what's going on in the world?
Well, I guess you don't have to look at Newsweek to stay abreast of what's going on in the world. There are many options, and maybe it's that Newsweek thought that there was a lot of that we're kind of in the overload mode with so much attention focused on Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, etc. That okay, My Life in Pictures might be a nice change of pace at the end of summer. It may just be that. I think there are enough media outlets out there that if anybody were truly interested in finding out what's going on around the world, they can do so.
All right, well, let's move on to former President Bill Clinton. His statements on Fox that his efforts to bring down al-Qaeda outmatched his conservative critics has upset the Bush administration. The former president had a fiery exchange on the television network over the weekend.
Now, I've never criticized President Bush, and I don't think this is useful. But you know we do have a government that thinks Afghanistan is only one-seventh as important as Iraq. And you ask me about terror and al-Qaeda?
Well, now Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is fighting back. She responded in an interview published Tuesday saying that the Bush administration aggressively pursued the group even before the 9/11 attacks. John, who's winning this war of the words?
Well, I frankly completely excuse President Clinton unless he had any kind of explicit warning of the kind that unfortunately the Bush administration did. Really, I mean, you would have had to have had quite an imagination to imagine that people were actually going to slam planes into buildings before that happened. And the man had a great deal of other things to pay attention to, and any warning that even hinted at that was one of a million sorts of things that come into intelligence agencies every day. He gets my complete pardon as a human being for not exactly pursuing that particular thing to any maniacal extent. Who could possibly have known that something so unprecedentedly hideous was actually going to happen? The Bush administration, that's something different.
Well, Jeff, what strikes me about this is that you have Democrats saying, thank goodness somebody stood up for our side, and you have Republicans saying he's insane, speaking of President Clinton, and he showed it on TV. Both sides are completely separate in their interpretations of what's going on. What's your sense of how people are splitting on this?
Well, I think it's something that I teach sometimes when I do diversity training, and you put a can of Coca-Cola on the table and you have kids from different regions discuss what that is. And it's interesting to see people get in a fight over whether it's a soda or a pop or, in the South, a cold drink, when in actuality, the essence of it is what it is. So we don't focus on the essence. I think I know who's losing in this debate, and that's the American public, because we're hosting a debate over the political equivalent of spilled milk. So I think regardless of what has happened in the past, how can you move forward from that to secure homeland security, to make sure that we are fighting the fight that we need to fight now? This has turned into a hot debate, and I think the public is losing.
But you know what? It's a debate about debates, and no one's getting to the real substance.
Right.
This National Intelligence Report is something that, if anyone took the time to read it, and I'm not sure many people will, but I have read the excerpts, they will see that there's a little bit in there for the Bush administration to hang on to, and a lot more for Clinton to hang on to, in terms of whether we're winning the fight against terrorism. Well, that report is fairly scary, and it shows that even the intelligence services are painting a dire picture of this fight against terrorism. Now, one more thing on Clinton I wanted to say. What was really jarring to me is not so much that Condoleezza Rice has now been designated to be the pit bull for the administration, but what was jarring for me is the passion that Clinton had for wanting to kill bin Laden. Mm-hmm. We contracted with people to kill him, he says. I got closer to killing him than anybody else has gotten since. That's kind of scary, but I guess that's the real world out there, and we have to be aware of that.
Well, ER, you mentioned that intelligence report, and actually Democrats are now calling for the release of another part of that report, which has been labeled as a draft, which means that it doesn't have to be released publicly. So we may actually get even more information on what's going on now. But I know that folks want to jump in on one more topic. This is a special request. Oprah launched her new network, Oprah and Friends, this week. Her famous best friend, Gail King, and Miss O had talked about Oprah's humble beginnings in Mississippi, particularly her mother's hope that she'd end up cleaning white people's houses because they give away nice clothes. This is something that Oprah's mother said to her. Now, Oprah also noted, this is on her radio network, she has all these white people that she employs, and that, in fact, there's only one black person on the staff. So now, instead of getting hand-me-downs from white folks, she is giving jobs to white folks. What do you make of this statement, ER? I mean, how are we supposed to interpret this?
I don't know. It seems rather silly to me. I'm sure she has more than one black person on her staff, so I don't quite know what that means either. But to me, her saying that is kind of as silly as George Allen, who keeps putting his silver foot in his mouth, to borrow a phrase, when it comes to race and how hung up we all are, whether we're black, white, or otherwise. So I don't know what message Oprah's really trying to send by saying she basically hires just white people.
John, you know, there's definitely been some criticism of Oprah. Although she is an amazing businesswoman and TV host, some criticism that she is not supportive enough of fledgling black talent or business people. I'm not going to make a judgment on that. But what's this statement about? What's this debate about?
One would have to sit down with Oprah and talk to her about these things. I don't know. It seems to me that really the looming implication here is Oprah some kind of self-hating racist? Is Oprah not like black people, especially now that she's climbed so high? And you have to judge the person. Sammy Davis Jr., back in the day, his office was so white that as black power came in, it had to be gently suggested to him that he bring in a black person for some color. And Sammy Davis Jr., you know, love him though we all do, did have a kind of a love affair with white people and often was given to saying that he wanted to be white. Oprah is not that type. Stedman's black. There's Beloved. There's The Color Purple. In general, I've never sensed in her that she has some problem with her color. And the two times that I've had any contact with their office, for the record, the person was black. I don't know what point in time she's talking about. I think that Oprah's kind of got the racism thing covered.
It's all interesting because in being here in Nashville, I find myself to be somehow living in an Oprah story at every place I turn. I went to college where Oprah went to college. Her mentor, Professor Dury Cox, was my mentor. I learned how to work radio on the same board she did at WVOL. So everybody has a story about Oprah, the self-esteem attacks that she suffered, some of the abuse that she suffered, the feelings that she may have had in college that made her give one school $20 million and her alma mater pennies. People talk about these things, and it's sad, but you can't get into the mind of Oprah, and Oprah is going to do what she wants to do because she's a queen. Some say turnabout is fair play. Maybe so if you're lording over a white cleaning staff, a white cooking staff, or wait staff, or cleaners and the like. I don't know if it's the same when you're handing out six-figure salaries to a mostly white staff. Some people are perturbed about that. African-Americans are perturbed about that. But it's Oprah's right, love her or utterly failing your darndest attempt to leave her to do what she wants to do. She owns that queendom and she runs it like she wants to.
ER, very quickly, Oprah has made her fortune because she reaches out not just to a black audience, but to a multiracial one. Can we have a more generous interpretation of her statements as being someone who really does try to reach out to people of all races?
Well, maybe she was just over-exaggerating in trying to tell us the rags-to-riches arc of her life. And I can understand that. I helped my mother clean houses when I was a kid, and the folks we cleaned for did give away good clothes. So I kind of understand what she's talking about, from coming from practically nothing to what she has today. Of course, I have nothing like what she has, but I think it was just an over-exaggeration. Her show does have a number of white experts who are being featured on her new radio program on satellite radio. And maybe over time that will evolve. Her best friend, Gail King, is black, and she has a part in the radio show, too. So, as I said, I think Oprah was just getting a little carried away.
All right. On that note, in New York, E.R. Shipp, professor in journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication. In Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle, is at Spotland Productions. And John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy at NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.